This is Joe Stein, and you're listening to Thoughts from Lane Ford Podcast. All right, welcome Jake Tura, the assistant strength coach at Youngstown State University, the maker of hypertrophy clusters and vertical jump protocol. Nice to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure, man. No problem.
Can you explain isometrics for people that are unfamiliar with them?
Yeah. So isometrics are basically just holding a certain position. And the reason I assume your listeners and me is like, I care about vertical jump. I care about, most people care about sprint speed or just explosiveness in general or athletic performance for like a land-based athlete would usually require like jumping, sprinting, changing direction. I've seen benefit in isometrics because they can help alleviate tendon issues if you have tendon issues. And usually people who perform in fast activities will have tendon issues. It's kind of like what makes for good performance with a tendon, like the tendon being very stiff and being very good at storing and releasing energy, is actually like more injurious for muscle. It's like more dangerous for muscle because a muscle has to contract against something like a tendon that's very stiff. So it's kind of a health and performance are not necessarily the same thing when you talk about tendons. But so for listeners, isometrics, the ones like I got into them, the kind of the story was I had jumper's knee in college. I did a bunch of vertical jump programs. I did like jump attack, jump manual, W vertical leap. I did all these jump programs. Some of them have strength training within them, which is pretty much what, if you want to avoid tendon issues, you should be strength training. That's probably the biggest thing that's going to prevent tendon issues. But some of them didn't have a lot of strength training. It was more like plyometric based training. And if you just do a ton of plyometrics, your tendons can get very stiff. And if you ever run into like, let's say an injured area within a tendon, if all you're doing is fast stuff, the tendon gets very good at like stress shielding. So like the healthy part of the tendon works and the unhealthy part never gets any training stimulus if you are just doing fast training. So I ran into jumper's knee like my sophomore year of college. I believe I just got done with a vertical jump program in the summer and it was bad. I went to the doctors. They did some imaging. They saw like the degenerative or reactive tendon. So like you see bad area within the tendon. And then they just told me to rest. They told me to rest for 3 months. And I'd rest for about 2 months, I'd rest for 2 months. Then I'd be like, I got to start playing basketball again. Go back to the doctor. Wasn't any better. They'd be like, you got to rest again. Wasn't any better. Then I did PT, which is like slow body weight eccentrics. Never get any better. Then finally I was like, I want to get surgery because nothing is working. I pretty much avoided all stress on my knee in terms of like heavy squats, heavy single leg stuff. I just trained my hips and I did the PT stuff they had, which was super low stimulus, but I got surgery. That did not work. It wasn't until I like started squatting. I did Bulgarian squatting. I squatted every day and that helped my knee pain. And then I would still have knee pain when I got back into jumping and dunking. So I did bodyweight isometrics. This was from like Joel Smith, Dr. Tommy John had been posting about long duration isometrics. So I did isometric lunge, like 3 to 5 minutes each day, just accumulate that time. And then I did a single leg stand for 3 to 5 minutes each day. And I would say after like 2, 3, 4 weeks, I was dunking. I wanted to see for myself. I could dunk every single day, no knee pain. My bounce definitely got better over that time too, but it was cool to see that what actually happened. Was it that my tendon got healthier? Was it that I improved my function because I like lengthened out my hip flexors, connected my foot and my glute better? I don't know what happened, but I was able to actually dunk and jump without any knee pain within my patellar tendon. So the thing that worked for me was heavy strength training. Heavy strength training is useful, but the bodyweight isometrics, doing them over and over, you can do them every single day, really benefited me for healing my tendon issue. And as far as the structure goes, who knows what happened, but I feel better. I'm able to jump. And for athletes out there who suffer with tendon issues, it's like you can do bodyweight isometrics every single day. And what do you have to lose? Because they don't cause a lot of soreness. They don't fatigue you. And if you really want to get back to doing the explosive activities, if you really love it, you should be training every single day, or you should be training twice a day if you want to heal your tendon. So I hope that answers the question as far as what isometrics do.
Yep.
Yeah.
So why do you think they benefit fast twitch athletes if they can last like 5 minutes and you're not moving?
Yeah, dude, I think like there's so much, there's like the way of, there's the isometric world that like you can explain things very simply and it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then there's like the voodoo side where it's like max contract 30 seconds and you cause, or like there's this whole side I feel like within isometrics that people just say things and it's maybe from taken from Jay Schrader or it's taken from DB Hammer or something, and it's like,
yeah,
can we actually prove that this is working the way it's working, or is it just like voodoo made up stuff that somebody who is smart said? I don't know. But why do they benefit fast switch? I think I look at it more like current day athletes, current day humans. We're probably, a lot of us were not exposed to a lot of the things we should have been exposed to as when we were kids, you know, like climbing on trees, playing multiple sports. Also, that sets like the foundation for your future athleticism because it keeps you healthier. It gives you a variety of movements options to go through. And if you have more movement options, you're probably going to use them versus doing the same exact style over and over, which would lead to overuse injuries. So I would say something that makes a lot of sense to me is if your foundation is not very big, your foundation of, let's say, strength, endurance, your foundation of, movement variability, even though there's not much movement variability within an isometric, but it's putting you in an exaggerated gait pattern if you're doing the isometric lunge. It's putting you on a single leg, which you might not get a lot of if you do a lot of bilateral lifting. It's doing things, I think it's building a better foundation. So then if your foundation is bigger, if it's like a pyramid, your foundation is bigger, the top is your performance. Your performance can be so much better because you worked on your foundation. I mean, strength coaches or performance world, like young kids, when we train young kids, we try to do things like cross crawl patterns, like crawling on the floor, whatever, throwing things, jumping on things, sprinting, changing, doing like a variety of activities. And it seems like we specialize nowadays, you know, specialize, and that limits your ceiling for performance. So I think the isometrics are building a better foundation because it's working. If you're doing an isometric lunge, it's working on a gait pattern, and gait is absolutely everything. When you play sport, you're moving around. So if your gait can be better because your hips can separate a little bit more, or you can get more pelvic movement, or because maybe you're getting a health response in your patellar tendon and in your Achilles tendon, maybe you're lengthening out your rectus femoris, your hip flexors, because you've been sitting all day. I don't know what's happening, but the isometric lunge is like, I think, one of the best exercises you can possibly do. And maybe that's leading to a better foundation so you can go off and perform better. There is the side to say, like when you hold an isometric, you have fast twitches working because it's a fast on and off of like the quad and the hamstring going like co-contracting really fast. There is that side. I don't know. I mean, if that's happening, cool. But I just think that the fast twitch athletes, jumping athletes, I work mainly jumping athletes online. I'm interested really in basketball. And like, man, these kids, they have jumpers in and they jump maybe like 20 inch max vertical. And it's like, if I tell them do single leg stand and do isometric lunge 3 to 5 minutes each day, after 2 weeks, their vertical will go up like 3 inches. And can we explain it from a fast twitch, like it's training your fast twitch fibers? I'm like, no, man, it's because your foundation was so poor. You're such a poor athlete in the first place. And all you did was try to jump. So I gave you a little bit of variability by giving you some strength, endurance, some exaggerated gait pattern, and your vertical jump went up, and now you're healthier. So I think kids just lack a foundation of those things. And when you give it to them, they perform better in the explosive activities. That's what makes the most sense to me. I don't really have interest in going into the whole voodoo side because everyone says something they heard from somebody else, and then the people who are like more research or evidence-based are like, that's complete garbage, like you have no research behind that. And it's like, man, I just kind of avoid that side.
Yeah, something that's overlooked kind of is foot strength. And I know that isos, I think, strengthen the foot, especially when you have your heel raised off the ground on that lunge.
Yeah, I think, well, the foot world, for me, it's like when we talk about foot strength or whatever, like I don't even know what it means, man. Like how do we measure foot strength? Are we like standing under a barbell and like pushing up against like a maximal load? We can measure like squat strength or leg strength.
Yeah.
Or we can measure like maximal isometric mid thigh pull is like a way to measure maximal strength. But it's like, what are we talking about? We're talking about the foot. And if we're talking about performance, I think we're talking about the arches of the foot, like where the heel, the first met head, the fifth met head. And if you get to the toes, because a lot of people go to the toes and do toe exercises, or they're doing like the isometric lunge way on their toes. Like, that's not strengthening your arch. Your arch is actually off the ground. Your transverse arch popped off the ground when you go on your toes. So I mean, I had a post on my vertical jump page where it's like, just get on the transverse arch of the foot if you're going to raise the heel up, which means you're not coming up super high. You're pretty much taking the heel up a little bit. But when people put up these foot exercises, they're like, this is super hard and it's strengthening your foot. It's like, okay, but that is not the arches. That's like, maybe if you go on the big toe and then on the heel, like you made it way longer, those contact points, and that's not strong at all. That arch is not strong. It's strong if you're at the first met head and then the heel, but not if you're way out on the big toe. So a lot of the foot stuff, I kind of avoid that too, because when we talk about foot strength or arch strength or something like that, it's like, often when we say strength, it needs to be measurable, and we can measure it with like an isometric mid thigh pull or upper body strength. Maybe you could measure with a bench press, or you could measure with a pull-up. Although the strength within those lifts is also a skill. So you can't tell, someone can be upper body strong and not a good bench press, or not a good at pull-ups, because they haven't done those two exercises. So strength is kind of a hard term, and I don't necessarily like to use it with the foot. But yes, if you're doing the isometric lunge and you pick the heel up a little bit, I'm sure you're going to see some gains within your foot, or you're going to just see that they can't handle it, I guess. You know, if you can't handle that position for a certain amount of time, that's probably pretty bad. And I would bet a lot of kids are, because we have cushioned shoes and we run on our heels, and like, maybe you don't have the ability to get onto the forefoot. I mean, I don't know. Everyone's a little bit individual, but yeah, the whole strength thing, I kind of stay away from it, because it's, who knows what we're talking about, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned lunge and the single leg stand, and I know these are really up to your imagination, but are there a few others that you really like to do, or do every day, or do often?
Yeah. Well, right now I hardly ever do isometrics now. I did them. My knees would hurt. They'd get sore all the time. But now my knees pretty much never hurt. Isometrics worked, and I don't enjoy isometrics. I enjoy dunking and I enjoy lifting. So I dunk and I lift, and like, I don't know, the isometrics worked for me. I don't need to do them anymore, you know, which is like, I think the point, if it's like a preparation thing, or it's like a prehab thing, or I guess a rehab thing, like, it should get to the point where you don't even need to do it, because you can just go and do your activity because you got healthy, you know? And if you're still doing the isometric lunge and single leg stand like 1 year from now, and you're doing it so that you can actually feel better or whatever, like you're still in pain, those probably didn't work for you, you know? But if you want to do them, like I know Dr. Tommy John loves doing them, because that's what he loves doing. So he does them every day, then it's like, awesome, he can do that. But for me, I don't really enjoy them that much, so I don't have to do them. But if you have a knee pain, that's something to try. And then maybe after a month, you feel better. You don't need to do them anymore. But as far as I've used those two, I mean, they're so simple to do. They're so simple to understand. And you're basically taking like the top, like let's just say like the top of a gait pattern, you're standing up straight and you're just going on one leg. And then you're taking like the extreme exaggerated form at the bottom, where you're going super deep in it. So like, if you think gait is everything, which it usually is, you can tell a lot about someone's performance and someone's likelihood of injury or injury history based on how they move, just their gait pattern within sprinting or within running or cutting or even jumping. So the isometric lunge, single leg stand, touch on gait. And I think that's a thing where the researchers, that's hard to research. Researchers within like the patellar tendon, they'll research the leg extension, and they'll research like the Spanish squat, and they'll research a leg press on a single leg press. That's what they'll use to heal the patellar tendon. And I'm like, that's okay. That's awesome. That's what we're targeting, the patellar tendon. Yes. But you're not doing anything for gait. You know, those are not touching on gait at all. That's why I love the single leg stand. The single leg stand is not going to hit your patellar tendon. It's going to, like, the idea is it connects your foot and your glute, which your knee is in the middle, but the isometric lunge definitely hits your patellar tendon. And in the back leg, it can lengthen out the rectus femoris, which if the rectus femoris is like locked up or tight, it can lead to knee pain. So I love those two exercises, dude. It's so simple. Like, I don't need to sell anything. If you're like a kid that needs to feel better, go and try those things every day. And I mean, if you really want to get better, you will do them every single day. And if you don't, then you just won't. But those are two I do. I've talked to David Gray. He does a little bit of stuff with knee pain for like co-contractions, where he'll get like, I've done this exercise where like you put a foam roller, you go and like you lay on your back, you put your foot on the foam roller, you do like a single leg glute bridge with like the rib cage down, rib cage pelvis connected, like connected, not like flared up with the rib cage or anything, or pelvis anterior tilted. So that really hits like the co-contractions with the hamstring, quad, and the calf. Because if you have knee pain, what could be happening is the co-contractions are just not registering when your foot is hitting the ground, and that's the moment you have knee pain. So this exercise, the foam roller, gives a little bit of instability, so it forces co-contractions. You could actually do like a calf raise the whole time, or get someone to hit the foam roller to get a little like perturbations to cause more co-contractions. Because you want, like when you're jumping or running or something, like you want the knee to be stable. You don't want a bunch of movement at the knee. And maybe there's too much movement at the knee because the co-contractions are not working, and that might be leading to knee pain. So that's one I've tried. But again, I don't have knee pain. The single leg stand, the isometric lunge, they work for me. I don't have any knee pain. I can dunk, I can lift, and I feel fine doing it. Those are the activities I love. But that's another one people can try. As far as other ones, No, like I don't want to confuse anyone. Like I don't want to add more confusion to say here's a number of exercises you can try. It's like, man, do these two exercises, maybe do this third exercise. Go and do just those exercises and do them every single day and maybe twice a day, and then tell me your knee doesn't feel better, because I bet you it will. But let me say this, because if you're like early in the rehab process, it could be so extremely painful with like a patellar tendon that maybe a wall sit is something you can do because it's lower stimulus, or maybe you can lay on your back and do like a leg extension with no weight. Because when it is super painful and inflamed, you might need to do even easier stuff than an isometric lunge or single extend. So that's an option. Those are options too. But you get to the point where you can do the lunge, the stand, and then lunge, you can add load if you want to do like pure tendon health, 30-second, 45-second holds. But no, man, I don't want to add more confusion. I think the more simple something is, the more likely someone is to actually go take action on it.
Yep. I know there's several different types as far as yielding and overcoming. You want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So the ones that I use for like, when we're talking about the foundational health, or we're talking about if we talk about foundational ability, like I'm just going to say do single leg stand, iso lunge, do those for as long as you possibly can. And assuming that the technique is good, you're not flying all over the place or anything. But technique meaning, if you're doing single leg stand and your first met head and your fifth met head are just flying all over the place on the ground, man, stop the set and like reset. Cause I don't think you should be having that much instability at your foot. Like you should be more grounded with the first met head, fifth met head, and the heel, not the toes. Ignore the toes. Just don't curl them into the ground. That needs to be rooted in. If you're doing the isometric lunge, I think you should avoid having a crazy anterior tilt, because some people just dump into crazy anterior tilt with their pelvis, get it more underneath you and hold that position. So when we're talking about foundational health, I'm talking like yielding, just hold the position as long as you possibly can. If you can get to like a 3-minute minimum on a stand or an iso lunge, I think you're in a pretty good position. People with knee pain, they will not be able to do that for the most part, because their function is so poor. Their foundation is so poor. So those are markers you could hit, is 3-minute holds. As far as like, that's just yielding. As far as, let's say, like tendon health, Keith Barr has said you need to do a 30-second hold for tendon health. Ebony Rio, Jill Cook, I think just those two have said you need to do 45-second isometric hold for tendon health. This is for like stress relaxation, the tendon. Keith Barr talks about tendon creep, stress relaxation. When you hold for like 30 seconds, let's say an isometric lunge, and you're actually holding weight, so it's difficult. Your tendon, the thing is, you hold an isometric lunge, and talk about the patellar tendon and the quad, because the patellar tendon and quad connect. If you hold the isometric lunge and you're talking about the front leg, the muscle tendon unit does not change length at all. Like there's no change in length, because you're staying in the same exact position. So what's happening in that 30-second hold, assuming you're like hitting failure at 30 seconds, is initially the tendon has a lot of deformation. It deforms a ton right away when you put a lot of tension under it, but then it is slowly relaxing and the muscle is actually shortening. So your quad is actually shortening because it's contracting. Your quad is shortening the whole set and your tendon is elongating. So like it's very slowly happening. So that's called tendon creep, is like this slow deformation over time. And as that happens, there's also stress relaxation happening. So the strong collagens within the tendon are relaxing, and the weak ones where there might be like a scar can actually feel the stimulus, so they can actually heal. The weak area of collagen could heal. That's what Keith Barr says. The other researchers, at least Jill Cook that I know of, she disagrees with him, that and Sean Docking disagree that that's not happening, that you can actually change the structure of weak collagen. I don't know where I stand on it, but I don't know how we could even figure out what's happening, because it's hard to image these things. But that's what he says. The 30-second hold, tendon creep, stress relaxation. They, Jill Cook, Ebony Rio, they say 45 seconds. I'm not sure what their reasoning is. I think the reasoning is you do 45 seconds where you get to near failure because you need about a 70% load, and that'll be about a 70% load if you can hold for 45 seconds. You need about a 70% load to cause increases in mechanical strength of the tendon. That's what they say. To improve mechanical strength of the tendon, you need 70%. So if you're going to rehab, let's say for jumper's knee or Achilles, and they're having you do body weight stuff and there's no progression, maybe initially you need to do body weight, but if they're not using a heavy load, you're not improving mechanical strength of the tendon. So it's kind of wasting your time if you're trying to strengthen the tendon to get you back to performing. That's what they say. And your question was on yielding. I covered that yielding. And then there's in the middle of that, it's kind of like, what do you do specifically for tendon health? And for tendon health, it's 30 to 45 second holds, a few sets, use a heavy weight, probably rest 2 minutes between each set. And then the overcoming isometrics, I've used them in my vertical jump protocol as like potentiation for like pre-training. Because if you do overcoming isometric, like you're pulling a trap bar against pins, or you're pulling a split squat against pins, you're doing a bench press against pins, and you do it for like 5 seconds, 7 seconds, as hard as you possibly can, like that really wakes you up. I even do a calf raise in that too, so you can work the calf at the bottom, calf at the top, like when you're pushing off a vertical jump. But that really wakes you up, and it can actually like improve strength in that range a lot better than like free weights could, because you're actually targeting that specific position. So I use that there in the pre-workout type stuff, but I don't think that's helping. If you have a tendon issue, I think you should be doing the yielding for the foundation, or I think you should be doing the 30 to 45 second holds to actually improve the mechanical strength of the tendon. So yeah, those are kind of the differences there. Pretty different if you ask me, but it really depends where you're at as an athlete, like on the health and performance spectrum. If you're like injured or you're not very healthy, probably stick to the more foundational tendon health stuff. And if you are healthy, you might not need to do that stuff. If you have a pretty good foundation, you could do more of the overcoming, like max effort, a lot of output, 5 to 7 second ones.
Yeah. So for potentiation, sometimes I'll push into a wall for like 5 seconds, and it seems to wake my CNS up pretty well.
Yeah, it does. And it depends on the person. Like, I love them when I do them for like a few weeks within a program. I'll love them, but it's kind of like you can kind of lose motivation after doing, like my vertical jump program is 5 weeks long, and then you're off of it. You're going out of the stuff. If you like, just think if you did that every day before training, it's like, yeah, you can feel more woke up, whatever, but where's the motivation? Like, what are you shooting for? You got no numbers, you know, like there's no intention that you can't see. I pushed with 100 pounds today. Tomorrow I pushed with 120 pounds. You know, it's like, I mean, who knows where it's at? So that's just one take I have on it. If you're doing a long duration isometric hold, you always have the intention of, let me try to get a longer time. But the isometric or the overcoming, I think that could be a limitation. Is, I mean, how motivating is it to do the same thing over and over without any immediate feedback on it, you know? But if it wakes you up and you enjoy it, go ahead. Don't let me take it away from you.
Yeah. I know there's some neurological benefits from ISOs that Tommy John has spoken about a little bit, just whether you're more confident maybe, or I don't know if you have anything to add about that.
What do you mean confident wise?
Well, like he said that he just about jumped in front of a car because he thought he could take on.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's so that's like, that seems like on the voodoo side of like the guys who did it like 5 minutes multiple times a day, is like, and this is the thing, is like, it's purely subjective, you know? And if you ever want to research something as subjective as that, it's impossible. That's why there's no research on it, because everyone has a different experience with it. But I went on a phase where like I was just accumulating 5 minutes a day. I don't know if I felt anything like that, because I was just trying to do it so I could get back into dunking. That's really what I cared about. But it is interesting though, because it's like you can do isometrics, like an isometric lunge, and hit the point of failure where like it hurts so extremely bad, and you just gave up, and you can do that. And then like a few hours later, do it again. And a few hours later, do it again. And there's really no other training method you could actually do hit failure that often. So I don't know, man, there's definitely something going on that's different than everything else, because you can't go in and fail a back squat at like 500 pounds and then come a few hours later, fail like 500 pounds again, you know, like, I mean, maybe you could adapt to it, but there's just so much that it takes away from you that you're not going to be able to do other things like other sports. So I don't know what's happening, but yeah, I would say for me, the kids I talk about, like trying to jump higher and stuff like that, is like their foundation is so bad that, yeah, dude, you put them in something like that where it just sucks and they challenge themselves to go longer and longer, and that's a limitation of their brain. They probably see some benefits like through all facets of life because they're actually pushing to the point of failure, you know?
Yeah. Do you want to cover fast twitch muscle overshoot a little bit?
Yeah. So, Daniel Bach of Jump Science, he initially had talked about this, which I thought was really interesting. And then if you read Super Training, there's actually a section in Super Training where they talk about that. And then Dr. Andy Galpin posted a lot of research. He posted a study a few years ago about the overshoot. So like there's pretty much like three places there that are like, it's pretty cool stuff. And there's multiple sources that are showing that it happens. So yeah, I think the idea is if you're lifting, like let's say you're lifting heavy weights consistently, or you're doing any activity over and over. So whenever you do an activity, like you can say, I'm doing lifting, I'm targeting fast twitch, or I'm doing plyometrics, I'm targeting fast twitch, I'm doing sprinting, I'm targeting fast twitch. Okay, yeah, but you're being active. So just by being active, there's like a conditioning component, there's an aerobic component that your body will actually shift away from fast twitch because it knows that you need to repeat the activity like the next day. You know, like you're giving yourself a signal that you're doing an activity and you need to be able to do it. And to be able to do activity, you need a certain level of aerobic base. You need a certain level of the muscle can get blood flow, get perfusion, you know, recover after activity. So they actually saw that like people who are sedentary have more like percentage fast twitch than people who are like Olympic weightlifters or obviously marathon runners. But it is interesting because it's like, they just sit, they don't do anything. Like they walk to and from places all day. They're not being active, and they have more of a percentage fast twitch than like an Olympic lifter, who's an explosive person. I forget what other group they studied, but it is super interesting. So the idea was that by being active, your body actually switches away from fast twitch. But when you stop the activity, your body overshoots back to fast twitch. So the idea is, if you do a program, like I have program hypertrophy cluster 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, vertical jump protocol 5 weeks. You can do any program, doesn't matter. But it has to be like hard lifting for like a month, 2 months, 3 months. And then you basically cut it and you're just doing, maybe it's sprinting, maybe it's jumping. You're just doing those activities for the most part, plyometrics and sprints, pretty low volume. You do that for maybe 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, 4 week, and you'll see the fast twitch overshoot. I don't want to say be sedentary and sit on the couch all day and do nothing, because you'll lose the skill of the activity. You know, you lose the skill of jumping, it's the skill of sprinting, because it is a skill, and you do lose it if you just don't do anything. So that is the idea behind it, though, is yes, train super hard and maybe you see negatives within performance. I'm not going to say negatives within fast twitch, because it's like, oh, I'm not jumping as high today. It must be that I don't have as many fast twitch. Dude, there's so many variables, you know? But if that's one thing that could help, and is it necessarily just fast twitch overshoot, or is it that when you take away lifting, you take away the health aspect of making the tendon less stiff? And so like when you stop lifting and you just do explosive stuff, your entire tendon will get more stiff because lifting is actually breaking crosslinks. Long duration isometrics would break crosslinks, which makes the tendon less stiff. So you take away the things that are making the tendon less stiff, your tendon will get stiffer because you're just doing the fast activity. So you probably have two things happening: the fast overshoot, the tendon stiffness. Actually probably three things. Would you have like the CNS or the beta adrenergic receptor resensitization because you're not killing yourself in the weight room? So it's pretty much dropping fatigue. As you drop fatigue, the fast twitch overshoot and the tendon stiffness adaptations because you're actually resting a lot more. So you have a lot of things happening for you. But the thing is, I have kids reach out to me and it's like, oh dude, I'm going to rest now for 2 weeks or something. It's like, hold on. Did you actually train hard for the last month or two? Or 3 months? Because if you didn't train hard, nothing's going to happen. you know, you're probably going to be worse. So you actually have to train hard, and that's usually within the weight room, whether that's like squatting, deadlifting, single leg lifting, whatever. Just get super strong and then take it away, and you'll see this. You should see a crazy performance gain, assuming you're dropping fatigue at the same time.
What are your thoughts on stretching? I know it, in my head, it can kind of go against stiffness in your body a little bit, especially static stretching. I just didn't know what your thoughts about that were.
Yeah. Well, I know Ben Patrick. He's like a knees over toes guy. I had him on my podcast and we talked about vertical jump training, and I should have asked him about stretching because I think that's one thing we disagree on. I would have liked to get his input. But we agreed on pretty much everything else, vertical jump world. But he's a big fan of stretching, like static stretching, getting in crazy splits, couch stretches, maybe hamstring. I'm not sure. I mean, I used to do all that stuff. It did not help me. It didn't help my tendon at all, my patellar tendon. How do I feel about it? I think you should do long duration isometrics if you want to do stretching, or full range of motion strength training to get benefits of having a, like, you don't just want long muscles, you want long muscles that are strong. And if you just hold a long position without any tension on the muscle, you're not going to be strong. It's like you're increasing your passive range. Like you take your range of motion and what's the passive range? You have no control over it, and just crank out that range. Do you want to be in that range in sports? Like if you're a yoga person and you have crazy hyper mobility, you're probably more likely to get hurt, because what if you get in that crazy extreme position? You have no control over it at all. And now some force is added because you're in sport. So I am not a fan of static stretching, but I'm not going to say don't do it. Like we have I train women's basketball here. We have a basketball player. She wants to stretch her hamstrings before every game. I'm not going to tell her don't stretch your hamstrings because it decreases power output and it's increasing passive range and whatever. That's what she needs to do to feel ready to play. And if you do a few like 10 second static stretches, I don't know, like, dude, it's not causing any harm. And it's like, I think it's a big placebo effect in my opinion. I think it's like, if you think it makes you feel better, go ahead and do it, but don't start telling everyone they need to do the same thing, because you probably can't give a good scientific explanation. But if you give the explanation that it's just what I need to do to feel good, go ahead. I don't care. But I don't know that there's a good justification for it. But if it's something you feel that makes you ready to perform, then go ahead and do it. I'm not going to try to take away from you.
Yeah. I know there's some studies out there that say like the vertical jump performances or sprinting performances went down after static stretching. In my mind, I know mobility is good, but I'd rather feel stiff, like a tight rubber band kind of, rather than.
Yeah, dude. There was a podcast, Joel Smith had a guy in his podcast. I forget how long ago it was, but it was super interesting because he was talking about the static, let's say a static hamstring stretch before a sprint. And we would talk about, or before a game, and we talk about, oh, the research is saying it's decreasing power output. We shouldn't do that because we want the structures to be stiff. We want the hamstring and the tendon to be stiff. We don't want to decrease that drive from the brain by stretching it out. But it's like, if you're doing it for a basketball game, like, dude, we're stretching 45 minutes before a game. You do the stretch 45 minutes before the game, you have so much time where you're doing the basketball activities. You know, like that decrease in like stiffness or whatever has happened at the brain level, it's gone away. I mean, I'm not sure what it's like for sprinting, but it's like, yeah, if you're going to hold a stretch for like 2 minutes right before you sprint, probably not the best idea. But if you're going to do it like an hour before you do it, and then you go through all your warm-up stuff, I don't really see any harm in it. But I would hate to advise someone on what specifically to do. That's the point of, like, that is the thing with an athlete. You need to figure out what works the best for you, and you need to go do it. And hopefully coaches are trying to guide you in that way instead of telling you specifically what needs to be done. Unless you're that type of athlete that wants everything spoon-fed, then I don't know. I won't connect with you, because that's not what I am.
I know RPR kind of helps with that too. It kind of naturally makes your body feel safer, where it can be as flexible as it can be, but you're not just sitting there stretching.
Yeah. I've done some RPR in the past, and yeah, that could be something that's useful. Yeah. And again, it's like, if it makes you feel better, go ahead and do it. But like, when you start telling everyone they need to do it, like RPR, I've done it. I've had people do it on me before, like heavy lifts before jumps, stuff like that. But sometimes, man, maybe I want to feel like locked up in my quads, you know, my quads are tight. Maybe that's going to help me jump higher. Who knows what it is. So it's like, these ideas we have of like the optimal positioning, the optimal, like, how do we know? Like, I don't think we ever do. We're just kind of guessing, but I guess it's worth experimenting with, definitely.
Before I let you go, can you tell us where we can buy your products at?
Yeah, so I mainly post on Instagram. My Instagram is Jake Tura, and my website is jackedathlete.com. I write my history. I talked a little bit about, like, I went through the jump. All I wanted to do was jump higher, dunk basketballs in high school, college, and I never could. And then I ran into jumper's knee. So I just built like 40 pounds of muscle. I got crazy, huge strength gains in squat, deadlift. So I, all of that. And then now in the last 3 years, I put it back into jumping and dunking. So like, it's pretty much everything that I love doing is training to put size on. If people are interested in that, training for maximal strength within like lower body exercises, and then training for explosive performance, which is basically just dunking. So for me, that's everything that I write about. And I currently am still working on products right now. I'm finishing up a product ebook for jumper's knee, patellar tendinopathy, because most of the information out there is garbage, complete garbage on it. So I'm hoping to use it to educate people on what is a tendon, what should you rest tendons, what is the point, what is the difference with a patellar and an Achilles, a lot of super interesting stuff that people can then go off, and whenever they run into jumper's knee, they can make their own decisions. Or if you're a sprinter, you run into a hamstring issue, you run into an Achilles issue, this will give a lot of information, not specifically for Achilles or hamstring. Achilles is kind of confusing because there's a lot going on there. But the more you can understand about tendons, the more you can understand about what type of training you need to do. And that's what's interesting with tendons. There's not a recipe or a template you can ever give generally to everyone. So for me, this is why it's been so painful. I'm trying to educate people as much as possible on tendon issues and everything that can affect them, so you can go off and make your own choices. But yeah, all my products are jackedathlete.com.
Yep. I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for taking the time to join me on this. And yep, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, man, for sure. No problem.